So as I was seeing cuts and I was seeing scenes, it was extremely inspiring to me. And not only inspiring, but motivating. Like, oh, I have to live up to what we're seeing. We're seeing this absolutely stunning picture.
Today on We Need to Talk About Oscar, I'm joined by composer Jeff Russo, whose work you might have come across basically if you watched TV shows in the last couple of years. And I must say, this is no exaggeration, since he has worked on the score of multiple Star Trek shows, all five seasons of Fargo, Lucifer, For All Mankind, and my god, the list could go on. I must add that these are projects from only the last 10 or so years. And today we are going to dig deep into the world of Steve Zaillian's Ripley, a brand new rendition of Patricia Highsmith's novels, which also gave us a true classic, The Talented Mr. Ripley, that, by the way, turns 25 this year. The show is releasing April 4th on Netflix. Plus, we are also going to cover season 5 of Fargo, currently available on Hulu. The former stars Andrew Scott, Johnny Flynn, and Dakota Fanning, while the latter Juno Temple, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Jon Hamm, and of course is created by Noah Hawley. Hi, Jeff. It's great to have you.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, good. Oh, good. And thanks for joining us. We usually like to start our interviews by asking our guests about their core memories that made them fall in love with films and filmmaking as well. Can you recall a moment in your life which you can associate one of these feelings with?
Well, yeah, actually, there's two. In terms of falling in love with the type of music that you hear in movies and hear in cinema, any kind of cinema, television or film, when I was, I think I was 9 or 10 years old, I saw E.T. and that score, I think more than the rest that I had seen at the time, really did make me or have me fall in love with that type of music. I really, really loved that kind of music. Now, that wasn't what I, at the time, wanted to do. That wasn't the score that made me fall in love with film music and made me want to pursue a life as a composer of film music, because, you know, after I saw that, I wanted to be in a rock band and became a rock guitar player. And that was the beginning of my career. That was what I did first, right? It wasn't until later that I really fell in love with wanting to do that as a life, as a daily exercise, you know, really wanting to make music to tell stories. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I saw Brokeback Mountain and heard Gustavo Santaolalla and his score for Brokeback Mountain that I really was like, oh, it's an incredible feat in order to help tell a story with music. It's not just about the music, but it's about what the music does to the story and supports the emotion and supports the tension and supports the comedy or supports the brevity. And it was at that moment that I really wanted to become a composer for storytelling, for narrative.
Wonderful story. And now on to these two shows. There are some aspects I'd really like to get into in regard to the similarities and differences between these two projects, head to head a little bit. First of all, Ripley is a limited series consisting of 8 episodes, and that's it. That's the story as a whole. While on the other hand, Fargo is in its, or rather after its 5th season, but it's an anthology, so it's like it consists of 5 miniseries, but not exactly. What I would also count as a resemblance, but I'm sure there are just as many similarities with this as well, between these two is working with the creators of the show, since you've previously collaborated with both of them, with Steven on The Night Of, which is without shadow of a doubt an all-timer miniseries, and with Noah, of course, on the previous seasons of Fargo. How have these experiences been for you in general, and what are you looking for in your collaborations with different creators, showrunners, and even at the very beginning of a project, script-wise?
You know, that's a very interesting question. You know, it's different for every project. Every relationship with a filmmaker is different, and some filmmakers require different tools from the composer. And you know, the one thing that is uniform in most of the work that I've done that is really fulfilling to me is the level of trust that you build up with a filmmaker. You know, the vernacular that you build up and the ability to talk about what it is a filmmaker wants and how to translate that into music. You know, in this particular case, both Noah and Steve are very musical individuals. Steve plays guitar, Noah plays guitar. They both understand, they both understand music and can speak musically. Now, that doesn't make it more difficult as it can sometimes. It actually makes it very easy to communicate between us. And the level of trust that I get from both of them is really great. You know, they believe that I can do what I set out to do. And when they give me that trust, it's an honor to have that trust from filmmakers of the level that we're talking about. I mean, both are extraordinary filmmakers, and the level of trust is really, it's very special to me. You know, I get to help tell their stories, and that's very meaningful. So when I start early on, they send me scripts, I'm reading the scripts and starting to sketch ideas as to what I think themes might be for their stories. You know, on Ripley, I'd been working on Ripley for about 3.5 years. And that was because I got in very early. Like, Steve sent me scripts and then he went off to shoot and he was asking me to send him music the whole time. And I was doing that.
However, on the other hand, a very obvious dissimilarity, what I was referring to before, is the type and length of these shows. Can you compare your relationship with a project that you know when you start working on it, how long it's going to last or span, versus when it is season after season, but at the same time, it can get the axe anytime? Which one is easier for you, and what difference does it make for your work?
Well, you know, I think that everything is different. It doesn't make it harder or easier. What I would say is, typically with shows like Fargo and The Night Of and Ripley, these shows that have a story arc, they go, you know, beginning, middle, end in a season. Those are typically more interesting to me because I get to tell the story and have the story be finished, you know, as opposed to ongoing series, which do create somewhat of a conundrum. It's like, how do you recreate the sound that you've created for the show, not feel like you're repeating yourself, and continually tip a hat to new characters, new thematic material, and new ideas that the show has to come up with in order to extend into season 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, to continue on. I have that with Star Trek. Knowing that there are end dates with Star Trek have, you know, certainly helped me along the way. With Picard, it was helpful, even to a certain degree. Star Trek Discovery, which, you know, I knew there was going to be an end. I just didn't know when it was going to be until we decided the end of season 5 was going to be the end of it. So having a definitive idea as to how an arc is going to be does make the idea of writing music for a story easier. And it doesn't allow for meandering, which music can often do if you don't know how to end.
And which one can be during and in the end more difficult between following vibe and sticking to it, yet adapting to the different characters and their very own story arcs and bringing some new to it in Fargo, while in Ripley, you had to find the grasp on the Italian setting and vibe and then bring something original to it while sticking to the tone at the same time.
I mean, both things are difficult. You know, both things do create somewhat of a conundrum for me. You know, something like Fargo is very interesting because I have to create a new score and a new thematic idea and motif every season while continuing to be inside of the world of Fargo. That's complicated, and I have to be very aware that I'm not copying myself as I move through seasons. With Ripley, we were very clear at the very beginning. We didn't want to take any of the ideas and or tone from the movie from 25 years ago, because that took a different approach to making, to telling the story. It was much more romantic and much more of that ilk. And we were focusing more on the thriller aspect of it and the fact that Tom Ripley is a psychopath and following that idea. So that was creating something new, but yes, I did have to write a bunch of music that was sort of, you know, in the world of Sicily and Italy in the early 60s to sort of give it the feel and place that it needed. And at the same time, creating a new sort of identity musically for this story, which, you know, to me, that's the fun stuff. Like, trying to figure out what something sounds like and then going for it and trying out different things. And, you know, that was it. My first theme I wrote 3.5 years ago, and that first theme appears just a couple of times in the show and only melodically, not even in its original form. I did, however, put that on the soundtrack because I thought that was an interesting way to see the way the score sort of came together. But That was the idea. That was the fun part of it, was like to follow my instincts to start with and where I ended up. And they're very different places.
And now a little deeper into Ripley, since the experience of watching it and just basically experiencing it is just so fresh. Throughout the 8 episodes, the suspicion and with that, the tension grows in everyone around Tom and to some extent in him or for him. And in this weird brain of mine, I stumbled upon an analogy or parallel between the music that is one of the fundamental pillars of this building, no pun intended, tension, and the monumental, gorgeous architecture of all the places Tom goes to. Now, how do you engineer and build up a score like this where it 100% plays such a visceral role?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question. And what I would say is you're totally right. So first of all, Steve as a director is extraordinary. He has an eye for a look and how to shoot something that is so evocative. So as I was seeing cuts and I was seeing scenes, it was extremely inspiring to me. And not only inspiring, but motivating. Like, oh, I have to live up to what we're seeing. We're seeing this absolutely stunning picture of all of these incredible places. And, you know, Italy is just a spectacularly beautiful place. Even its most ugly is gorgeous on some level. So as I was seeing all of that, it was certainly inspiring and very motivating to me. And what I really wanted to do was match the beauty and stature of it, and also trying to not use tropes, you know, score tropes that tend to be used in thriller stories. I really wanted the the sound of the show to match what we were looking at. And so, you know, a lot of ideas came from thinking like, well, what would it sound like if this score was written in 1963? You know, it's funny because one of the things Steve said to me at the very beginning was, if you're ever at a loss for what to do, think of it like, what would Ennio Morricone do? Like, how would he approach writing this type of score? And that was very interesting to me because the idea wasn't to sort of copy what Ennio Morricone would do, but, you know, taking into account like how he went about telling stories was a very interesting way to look at it. And it's very Italian. And it is not necessarily, I didn't necessarily want to write Italian style music because that's not what I do. Although I had to infuse an Italian ethic into some of the pieces of music because we did need to put our viewer in place. But generally, the score is a very sort of classic movie type score. And I really thought like, well, that's what would have happened had this been written in 1963. And that, I think, and I hope I've done the job of living up to what we're seeing.
Kinda in connection to this, instrument-wise, the score includes, correct me if I'm wrong, primarily piano and violin. And I was lucky enough to listen to the music itself alone as a whole today. And it tells a story on its own and of its own just as well. Plus, since you mentioned it a couple minutes ago, it also tells the story of the score itself coming together to some extent. Is your, and I don't want to go too hypothetical, so feel free to just tell me to go to hell with these questions, but is your work always measured and well calculated, or does it ever happen that the story takes over and you kind of become sort of the passenger of your own work?
Well, that's you know, another very interesting question. And I would say that that's exactly what happened on this particular show, is that I started writing, but what I didn't realize was I couldn't get in front of what Steve was going to be telling. And that's why I put together the soundtrack the way I did, because it sort of guides you in what I was thinking and how I was led around by the story. The story really did inform how I was going to be writing. Like, I wasn't in a bubble. I wasn't in a vacuum. And I never am, but sometimes I'm creating stuff in tandem to the filmmaker, which is what I do a lot with Fargo. In this particular case, as I was beginning, I would send stuff to him. He would tell me how to make changes, send them back before he even knew how he was going to edit it. I would make changes, send it back. He would make edits, and then he would show me what the story was doing, because, you know, his editorial technique is, you know, he knew what he wanted when he was shooting, but he really put it together in the edit room, which is, I think, you know, that's how you make these things. And as that was happening, the story was changing. My ideas were changing. So every time he would send something back to me, it would inspire a new idea for the next thing that I had to do, which was the next episode and or the following scene and or scenes down in episode 7. You know, he even said to me, he wanted me to work backwards, which in fact happened, right? So I had written a bunch of music for episodes 1 and episode 2, and then he asked me to jump ahead to episode 7, and I wrote this piece of music called Ab Initia. That music became the basis of a lot of music that you hear in episode 1, and things got moved around because he was thinking, he had a much more sort of three-dimensional view of everything than I did, because it was all from in his head. As I continued to write, it was guiding me around. So it was not, in fact, you know, measured and calculated. The story was really driving the boat for me. Whereas with Fargo, I do have a much more measured and calculated view on who I'm writing particular pieces of music for, how I'm writing particular pieces of music. There was a rancher theme. There was Dots theme. There were all of these thematic, there was all of this thematic material that got used in the places that they were meant for. In this, in Ripley, a lot of the music I wrote, because there wasn't, the only truly important character that needed all of my attention was Tom. So yes, I didn't really need to write a theme for Dickie. I didn't really need to write a theme for Marge. I didn't really need to write a Ravini theme. But in fact, pieces of music became thematic for them as we used them more and more in the story. That's what I mean about the story really did sort of pull me around in the directions I needed to go.
Yeah, yeah. And now that you mentioned it, how often is it with the project you're working on that, like here where you had to jump a couple of episodes with writing the music that was later on used in an earlier episode? How often does the music end up this interchangeable between different episodes?
Well, you know, music is the thing that's interchangeable, right? Like we can use it wherever we want. I write something that I think is meant for one place, and Steve says, you know what? I think this will work better in this other place. And then we put it there, and then I have to make some adjustments, and then he's right. I mean, he's the filmmaker, so he's going to have more of an idea as to how things should be utilized. The beautiful thing is, as we create the score, as I start writing, we're on the same page in terms of how things are feeling and how things are working. But he has, again, a much more three-dimensional view of the entire, you know, canvas than I do. He has a depth of view that I don't have because it's all his imagination. So as I'm writing something that I thought is meant for, you know, Marge sitting in the cafe, that piece of music ends up as Tom is walking to the clock shop. There were things that we did utilize in the same ways, and then things that we utilized in different ways. And I had to sort of keep up with Steve as he was throwing curveball after curveball to me. So as I was creating the score, he was taking what I was doing and creating what he thought was his score and then throwing it back to me for me to adjust to match what he was wanting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely, it does. Many times Tom does something, or at least try to do so, in plain eyesight. For example, when Dickie is painting and he tries to pull an envelope out of the pocket of Dickie's jacket that's playing on the sofa next to him. What I want to ask you is basically the opposite. Do you ever want to or try to hide something from the audience, the listener, or for the listener in plain eyesight in your work?
Yeah, I do. I do that. And I do that for a number of reasons. One, music can be very subliminal. So if I just allude to a theme, I can make someone think about something without them even realizing that that's what I'm doing, because I can hide melodic moments in chord changes. I can hide melodic material in, you know, playing it on a different instrument. I can hide things in plain sight. And I do use that tactic sometimes. Sometimes it's for my own benefit. Sometimes I just like to be sneaky. And, you know, that's part of where I find fun in what I do. But also I do that calculatedly so I can manipulate the emotion of a scene. And that can be very, very effective.
To conclude our chat, a rather general question. What's next for you?
I'm currently working on the new television 8-episode run of Alien with Noah Hawley. Noah is writing and directing a couple of the episodes, and we're working on that for sometime in 2025.
Amazing. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time. It was truly an honor talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was very thought out and well-meaning questions. It's really always great to hear someone thinking about the scores and music and how it affects the picture and story. It's really made me think.
Thank you. I try my best.
You have a great day.
And you too. Take care.